Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian. I'm Daniel Messer. We're living in a time where we carry a computer in our pockets that is far more powerful than anything we had on our desks 10 years ago. We use them to take pictures, jot down notes, check our social networks, get us from one place to another, send quick messages, send longer messages, browse the web, read books, order food, listen to music, wake us up, watch videos, and occasionally we might make a phone call on them too. The smartphone is the true ultra-portable computer because, well, no matter how lightweight your laptop, you probably can't fit it in your pocket. I know I'm not alone among my listeners when I say that I feel naked when I leave the house without my phone. Then I thought, wait a minute, could my phone actually be my ultra-portable computer? After all, I do so much with it anyway. Could I extend its use and functionality to accommodate my needs when I'm out and about, just running around? Granted, there are tablets that can do all of this, and that's fine. But tablets are large, and even my 7-inch Galaxy Tab 3 doesn't really fit into a pocket very well. My phone fits in almost any pocket I need it to fit in. Sure, I carry a bag, but what if I could lighten that load a bit? At least when I'm simply doing errands and not running around for work. Could my smartphone replace my tablet and MacBook Air as a computer when I'm away from the house, or away from the office, or away from the studio? Well, there was only one way to find out. This is Cyberpunk Librarian, episode 31, Living on the Phone. My name is Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood Cyberpunk Librarian, welcoming you back to the show that is all about exploring the intersection between libraries and technology, where we're living that high-tech, low-budget lifestyle. So hey, friends and listeners, it is good to be back in front of the microphone again. I'm kicked back here with some coffee in my headphones and in a studio with some new improvements. See, when you're living in Arizona, you have four seasons that you have to consider. And these seasons are early summer, midsummer, late summer, and next summer. It gets warm here pretty early, and we've already had 80 plus degree temps, or 27 plus degrees for those using the proper metric system. I love the heat, but my studio is quite easily the warmest room in the house. When we bought this place, the studio lacked overhead lights, and while it has a vent from the air conditioner, the air didn't always move around in here the way that you would want. Now, I've got a ceiling fan, lighting, and suddenly, the 32-inch HD TV that is my monitor no longer glows like a beacon at the airport. Now, as you may have gathered from the intro, we're going to talk about ultra-portable to beat all ultra-portables. Your smartphone. Many of us carry these things, and they do so much for us, but are we really getting the most out of it? Think about it. What do you use your phone for? Listening to music? Sending a text message? Checking your email? Maybe you pop into a social network and see what's going on? I bet that most people, including a lot of geeks, frequently use their smartphone on a 20-second basis. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I mean that a lot of us probably use our smartphone for short, maybe 20-second-long spaces of time, and then it goes back into the pocket. Now, this doesn't count listening to your music or something like that. After all, if you're listening to a podcast or some music, you're probably not looking at your smartphone either. It's hooked to your headphones, and it's still probably in your pocket or just laying on your desk. You're using it, sure, but you're not really using it. It's an ambient use of the device as you're simply letting it do something while you do something else. You might look at it to skip a song or to start a new podcast, but other than that, it's just there. I started wondering if I, and others, could get more out of their smartphones than we ever have been. After all, we've got laptops and tablets and ultra-portable computers and all of that fancy stuff. Maybe, like me, you carry a tablet in a bag, and that's your quote-unquote real on-the-go computing solution. Thing is, I don't know about you, but I don't have a tablet or computer hooked up to the cellular data networks. My tablets are all Wi-Fi, where my phone has 4G pretty much anywhere I go. Couldn't I harness that connectivity and, with a couple peripherals maybe, make this phone do as much as a tablet could do? Maybe even more? Why not? So I decided to take a week and make a conscious effort to use my smartphone as my on-the-go, away-from-the-house computer. I wanted to do everything with it, especially things that I normally only did with the tablet. Now keep in mind, I'm a pretty heavy tablet user both at home and out in the world. I read on the tablet, I take notes, I watch videos, all of that stuff. I also write on my tablet quite a bit using a Bluetooth keyboard, and by write, I don't just mean a quick email or something. I mean I write podcast episodes, stories, essays, blog posts, all of that I write on a tablet. In other words, more long-form stuff. My tablet is literally just one step down from my computer, and it's the thing I use when I don't want to go unhook the MacBook Air from all the external drives and the monitor and all of that. Have tablet will travel, and I can leave whenever I want. So how did it work out? Well, let's take a look at how my week went. Before we get started, I should probably tell you about my phone and some of the things I do with it and stuff like that. I can't deny that it was probably easier to use my phone as an on-the-go computer since I carry one of the biggest phones on the market, the Galaxy Note 3. I upgraded to the Note 3 almost 2 years ago, and if you want to know how I feel about it, I can easily sum it up like this. My cell contract is coming up for a renewal, and that means a new phone. I'm waiting till about June-ish because, according to rumors, that's when the Galaxy Note 5 will be out. I love my Note 3 so much that I'll buy the newer version of it when it's available and when my contract comes due. Now, there is a bigger phone out there, the Galaxy Mega 2. However, it's only available on AT&T from what I can tell, and it's not as good as the Note 3. So the Note 3 is the largest phone I can easily get my hands on, and I love it. Keep in mind, I upgraded from an iPhone 4S, and yeah, the size difference still astounds me. So, given the size and power of the Note 3, it's basically a small tablet rather than a large phone. It may be unfair to say that I spent a week on a phone when the phone is a small tablet, but hey, it's a phone, and after 2 years with it, I still think it's the best phone I've ever had. Obviously, the Note 3 is an Android phone. No matter now, because if you're looking for a big iPhone, Apple finally filled that niche with the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus. The iPhone 6 Plus has a slightly smaller screen than my Note 3, but the difference is so tiny it's pointless. So far as I'm concerned, they're the same screen size. What I'm really trying to say is that if you're looking for a larger phone for a workflow like this, you can get it on both sides of the cellular shop. It doesn't matter, though, if you're rocking an iPhone, a Galaxy S5, whatever. You, too, can probably get more from your smartphone, no matter what the size. It only takes a little reshaping of your expectations and your workflow. It's not simply a matter of doing more with less. Indeed, I found myself getting just as much done on the phone as I did on a tablet. You've got a smaller screen, sure, perhaps a little less power, but everything else is there. I think we get used to a lot of the shiny stuff in any operating system that we start to miss it when it's not there, even when it's not needed. So yeah, your phone isn't going to work or look like OS X or Windows or your KDE desktop. It's not supposed to either. Your little pocket notebook also doesn't work like a beautiful leather journal. You can write in both of them, but they definitely have separate purposes. The way I see it is this. When I came to living on a phone for a week, my smartphone was definitely a GTD platform, and that's getting things done for those unfamiliar with the abbreviation. It's not really there to be pretty, it's there to be functional. And that said, let's talk about the functionality. So, you can do anything you want on a phone, so long as it's available on the web, or there's an app for it. Now, really, that's kind of how computers work too. Like I said, it may not be as pretty as your laptop computer, but accomplishing things on a smartphone is easy. In fact, it might even be easier because you're dealing with one thing at a time. Things might happen in the background, but they're happening in the background, not right up in your face. Still, even with a large phone, I do recommend a few things to make your life easier. First and foremost, get yourself a Bluetooth keyboard. Now, I have to say that this is where Android really shines because the Bluetooth keyboard on an Android device is far more capable than any iPad or iPhone. Now, that's not a knock at Apple. That's just chip truth, my friends. On my Note 3, all of the keyboard shortcuts are there, including the all-important Alt tab. Yes, you can switch between applications on an Android device just like a desktop operating system. For some reason, Apple hasn't added that to their iOS offerings. You want to switch applications? You're going to touch the device. Simple as that. You're going to double-click the home button and start swiping. On my Note 3, I hit Alt-Tab the number of times needed to go to a different app, and then I hit it again to go back. Control-X-C-V for cut, copy, paste. That's there. Control Z almost works everywhere for undo. Occasionally you'll run into an app where it doesn't, but for the most part, Control Z is undo, just like it is on a PC or a Mac. Control L works in the browser for selecting your URL bar. Arrow keys work, and there's very little left out of the equation to make your keyboard experience on an Android device just as good as your experience on a traditional PC operating system. Oh yes, you can type faster with a keyboard than you can by pecking at the screen. That's kind of important, too. I use a Motorola Bluetooth keyboard. It's perfect not only because it's an Android-focused keyboard, but because it's got functional keys to control anything, playing music, it controls the volume, it'll launch Gmail or Chrome with the push of a button, and so on. The action on the keys is quite decent, and I actually like writing with it. It's a pretty decent keyboard. Funny thing is, you can even pair up a Bluetooth mouse with most Android devices, my Note 3 included. You'll get the mouse arrow and the icons become clickable and all of that. I don't really need or want that. If you've listened to some of my previous shows, you know that I'm not a huge fan of the mouse. I actually use a lot of keyboard shortcuts to get around using the mouse. But if that's what you're into, the option is available. Once again, Android kind of outpaces iOS here, because there's no way to even pair a mouse to an iPad or an iPhone. Like, at all. I know, this is just Apple's way, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that this way doesn't work for me. I really wish Apple would take the training wheels off of iOS. It's a damned fine operating system, but they're really crippling it for anyone approaching a power user. Seriously, when I paired the keyboard with my phone, that was 95% of everything right there. All the functionality that I'd want from a tablet and a keyboard, it was right there on my phone. Now, some people might scrunch up their faces and accuse me of cheating in some way. Living on your phone, but you need a keyboard? Dan, that's adding something. Now you have to carry a keyboard. Yes, that's true, yes. But here's the secret. I carried a keyboard anyway. If I have a tablet, chances are I've got a keyboard with me too. I hate carrying my wallet in my pocket, especially my back pocket. I don't know how men generally do this because I find sitting on my wallet to be highly uncomfortable. And keep in mind, I'm a librarian. It's not like my wallet is full of money. So my wallet's pretty thin and sitting on it is still very uncomfortable. I don't like that. And I'm just generally not fond of loading my pockets down with a bunch of stuff anyway. So I carry a small bag with stuff like my wallet, keys, pens, notebook, and a keyboard. I rarely leave the house without a tablet, and if I have the tablet, I'm probably going to have the keyboard with it too. The Motorola Bluetooth I use barely weighs anything, so it's not like I'm loaded down. Actually, when I come to think about it, the heaviest thing about that keyboard is the batteries. Another thing you might want to look at is some kind of stand to prop up your phone. Now, there are some cases out there that come with little kickstands on the back, and that's fine. I find that they break, though. I've had a couple of cases like that with the little kickstand, and I find that the weakest part of that case is the kickstand. It just seems to break if you look at it wrong, and that's not cool. So I have this inexpensive tablet stand that weighs slightly less than my paper notebook, and it folds up to fit into almost anything. You open it up, pop the phone on it, good to go. You don't need that, but it saves your neck a little pain by, looking down at your phone. If you put your phone flat on the table and are trying to, sort of look over your keyboard or look over your hands or whatever, that'll get to your neck pretty quickly. Granted, the stand is designed for a 10-inch tablet, but the legs open up as wide or as narrow as you need them. My Note 3 looks a little odd on it, but who cares? It's working, and it's working flawlessly. And it's a thing I already had, so I didn't have to go buy anything. I already had this thing with me. Something you'll need to consider and prepare for, though, is the fact that if you're going to be using your phone like a tablet, you're also going to drain your battery faster. Remember that bag I just mentioned? It also contains a charging cable and a plug, which I carried with me long before I ever thought of this experiment. If I have my bag, I've probably got a cable on me. I also have a spare battery in there too, so just in case I can't plug in, I can certainly switch out. I've used that battery once, and I don't mean once this week, I mean once. It's there if I need it, but at home, at work, or on the go, I can usually plug in if I really need to. I've got an adapter in my car, too. One way or another, if I start to run out of battery on my phone, it's been a really freakish day. So, let's talk pros and cons. Obviously, your phone is probably not as powerful or as large as a tablet. For me, that is a feature and not a bug. I like my Tab 3, but it's 7 inches and only fits in the thigh pockets of my cargo pants. If I'm wearing jeans, then I can't put it in any of the pockets. My phone fits my jeans, my phone fits in my slacks, it fits in my cargo pants, it fits in my running shorts, whatever. As long as it has a pocket, I can usually put that phone in it. So while the size is a factor, I think there are more pluses than minuses. And as far as power goes, I think I've reached a new point in my life that power, and I mean raw power, not just power that you get from the wall, but the power doesn't matter as much as usability. Is it fast enough? Okay. Does it lag? No, not really. Does it do what I need it to do? Yes. Then so what if I can't play Assassin's Creed on it? I don't want to play Assassin's Creed on my phone. That's kind of not what it's for. I want to write, or I want to surf the web, or respond to email, stuff like that. Once again, this goes back to it being my GTD device. Meanwhile, I've been setting up Raspberry Pi digital signs this week at work, and all of my notes on what to do with the scripts are kept in Evernote. You would think I've done enough of these by now that I remember this stuff, and for the most part I do, but just as soon as I get cocky or just a little overconfident, I'm going to forget to do something, and then I'm going to have to go back and fix it. So I'll just look at my notes. It's my security blanket. It's fine. So rather than lugging my laptop over to my workbench, I'll just drop the phone there and read my notes. With all of the syncing apps and Dropboxes and OneDrives and all of that that's out there, there are apps that you can use them along with all the music apps and video apps that simply tie to a given account. There's no reason to worry about something being confined to your phone. Indeed, I can't think of a single bit of data on my phone that can't easily be shared with something to get it off the phone, or better yet, just to sync it to another device. Maybe there's something there, but I spent a few minutes flipping through all of my apps, and every single one, from Evernote to the camera, and from my ebook apps to my contacts, I can share anything to something that'll make that data portable. So what's the verdict? Well, I'm not going to talk too much about the apps because I've done a show on Android apps before, and really not much has changed. There are certain sort of stock apps that I think most people will use, or something like most people will use. Not everybody uses Evernote, but some people will keep notes in their email. Not everybody will keep notes in their email, but maybe they've got just a little text editor on their phone. Some people use Google Keep. Some people use, you know, Wunderlist or something like that. So that stuff is there. I'm not going to really talk about the apps because what you use on your phone, I bet by now, unless you're just brand new to that phone and you've never had a smartphone before, you've probably figured out what you're doing. You kind of figure out what you want. I kind of marvel at some of these tech journalists who download and try out new apps every day, you know, day in, day out, new apps. Because for the most part, once I get my phone set up, I don't download that many apps after that. I might find a new thing that I want to try, and maybe it's sticky, maybe it's not. If it is sticky, then great, I'll use it. If it's not, it usually winds up uninstalled a couple weeks later when I remember that it was there and I haven't used it in 2 weeks. So whatever apps you're using, those will probably still work, especially if you have a nice keyboard or something ready to go with your phone. So the verdict, yes. Well, I switched bags this week because I wanted to lighten my load a bit. I have this tendency to overload and overpack and just take a bunch of crap that I really don't need, but I'll convince myself that I might need, and then I actually don't need it, and I never use it. And I'm trying to get away from that. I'm trying to prevent that. I may be in decent shape, but my back isn't. My back is the bane of my existence. And if I can save it some work, I will. So my new sling bag carries the essentials: wallet, earbuds, chapstick, my work ID, my keys, notebook, a couple of pens, charging cable and plug, and a Bluetooth keyboard. Notice I didn't mention a tablet. There was no mention of my MacBook Air. That's because I'm leaving that stuff at home now. Give me my phone, a keyboard, and hey, I'm set. And I bet you will be too if you just give it a shot for a week and see how it turns out. So hey, that about wraps up this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I thank you for tuning in. Thank you for allowing this to come up on your podcatcher of choice. And hey, maybe you got some new ideas for new things that you can do with your phone, especially if you have a larger phone. I tell you, I'm not missing anything from the larger tablets, the 7 and 10 inch things. I'm getting just as much done on my Note 3, and it's pretty great. The song you're currently digging on is Pacific by Psychedelic Pedestrian. Earlier in the show, you heard Born Into It, the Chill Out Mix by Redman. And of course, the show opener, as always, is Belly Dance at Ebisu by Ryo Miyashita. You can pick those up at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast, where you can see the show notes for this episode and the show notes for all the other episodes, where you can listen online, download them, subscribe on iTunes or RSS. Whatever you like to do, that's what we're here for. We're here about the options. So check out the cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. Get yourself some music and see what else was in the mix. See what you might have missed if you're just now catching up with episode 31, Living on the Phone. Cyberpunk Librarian is hosted by The Archive. Archive.org, Internet Archive, great people doing great things, preserving, saving, and hosting a whole bunch of great content for the Internet. Check out The Archive for more podcasts, for great videos, and online video games. Yes, play video games right there on Archive.org. Great stuff. Check them out. I love those people. And hey, they've got a new site design. You should check that out too. Looks great. Beautiful. Very updated, very new. I love it. Also, you should check out Recirculated, the Circulating Ideas Kickstarter. Steve Thomas, the host of Circulating Ideas, another library podcast, which you should totally check out. If you dig this, go dig on Circulating Ideas. He's hosting a Kickstarter. And by the time you hear this, he's got 10 days to go. And what he's trying to do is open up the show to more people in more ways by having the shows transcribed. He's trying to raise money to pay a professional transcriptionist to transcribe the shows. He does some great interviews with some of the great people in library work today. So if you have a few bucks to spare, pop over and help out Steve Thomas and Circulating Ideas with the recirculated Kickstarter. Links to that in the show notes, cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. As a matter of fact, if you have any interest in that here, let me know. I have the scripts. I could just throw those up online at some point. But the real question is how do you get in touch with me? Well, there are a myriad of ways. As I said, I'm all about the options. I am at Bibrarian on Twitter. You can hit me on Google Plus at google.com/+DanielMesser or cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. If you still prefer that tried and true email SMTP method, cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. I love to hear from you. Not only if you want to ask me a question or if you got an idea for a show, that would be great. But yeah, let me know if you want, if there's an interest in those scripts, I'll kind of get them formatted and, you know, more readable than they are. Hey, before I get out of here, there's one more thing I want to tell you about. The response to my last episode, episode 30, Intergalactic Librarian, the story time, that got quite a bit of response. I was really surprised at how many people liked that. I figured it was just a bit of silliness, so, you know, something a little special for episode 30. But people really liked it, and as it happens, I have more stories about Skylar and Jessica, and after a little back and forth with some friends online, I'm going to be launching that as a new podcast, Intergalactic Librarian, coming soon to cyberpunklibrarian.com. Watch for that. I'm kind of getting a few things together, but hopefully should have that up online and running very soon. If you like this, you might like that. And hey, also, check it out anyway. It's fun. It's not going to be all techie. It's going to be pulp science fiction and librarians. So that might be something up your alley if you're into this kind of thing too. Meanwhile, that is it for this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I thank you again for tuning in. I will see you again in 2 weeks or so. We usually do this every other Monday. So, hey, drop in, check out your podcatcher next time in a couple weeks, see if you've got a new episode. And until then, I just want to remind you that you don't have to be high-tech to be low-budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. Take care now.
To listen to the message again, press 1.